Welcome to Crypto Nights, where we help you finally make sense of the trending world of cryptocurrencies. So gather your virtual piggy bank and let's get started.
Hi, Colin. Hi, Pierre. Welcome to Crypto Nights. We are so thankful that both of you are joining us as guest speakers. Why don't we start off with an introduction to each of you and then an introduction to your company?
So I'm Colin Cantrell. I'm the founder of Nexus. It's been in development and deployment since about 2014. So a little background, we run a nonprofit corporation called the Nexus Embassy. And it's kind of basically designed to handle all the development, marketing, any of the aspects associated with growing Nexus. A little background on the project. Nexus is a live blockchain with a lot of augmented features to the current blockchain technology, taking into account certain aspects that can be improved, including quantum security, scalability, and practical use of the blockchain so that people can start to, I guess, take some of this technology and really make it practical in their everyday lives. So we focus on those main core principles and also the original intentions of the blockchain space, which is to kind of improve the current systems that we have, improve efficiency, improve financial systems, improve value storage mechanisms, and make it as distributed as possible so that you have redundancy, you have resistance to corruption, and you can create an open public system that everybody can utilize, and it becomes as fair as possible. As we're seeing kind of the world we live in right now, I mean, a lot of it is based off of paper systems that were around for a few hundred years, and it's a technological point, I guess, of evolution where we're at the precipice of something big. We're starting to see that all this technology is going to really culminate together into a new future, and I believe blockchain is one of the fundamental aspects of that. Another fundamental aspect is artificial intelligence and making that safe and relatable. And the last one is space, which is kind of the new frontier for people. Just like the personal computer was put into everybody's hands, the Cube satellite is going to put space computing in everybody's hands where you can access those. They can do mapping. There's a lot of incredible applications. So those are three areas of focus and kind of contributing to the world. Figuring out, well, how do we help transition the systems to improve them and kind of make the world a better place one day at a time.
Fantastic.
Yep, and I'm Kia Rieg. I've been involved with Nexus for, I started out, met Colin about a couple of years ago or something like that, and started getting involved. And then, you know, last year we formed the nonprofit, which was, you know, designed to bring all these people together and really put an all-star team around Colin to really help the project out. My background is I was a hedge fund trader for 9 years, and then I started a successful consumer products company. I took all those skill sets that I had in finance and building companies and started applying them here. So we started bringing the team together and, just really working on these ideas, working to flesh them out, working to put teams and systems in place to bring the project to, up to a better speed, a quicker fruition, and really just get it out there.
Yeah. Thank you, Colin, Kier. The thing that really got me excited when I started getting to know about Nexus is, it's a technology company, of course. And, now as I learned going forward, I saw that, hey, there's no ICO going on. This is unusual. And then you talk about, hey, we're a nonprofit. And then, so it's very exciting. And then whatever you've been around from 2014, you've been working hard at it. So there's a lot of legitimacy, credibility, reality. And you're taking something as fundamental as the blockchain and fixing the inherent problems from what I understand. So why don't we start that off? What was the driving motivation, Colin, for doing Nexus? And how did you go about it? How did you fix some of the fundamental flaws or intent to?
So a lot of the driving motivation was just passion, I guess you could say. When I found out about blockchain in about 2013, I just had that feeling, this is the future. This is a way we can solve a lot of the challenges we have in the financial systems. So that kind of drove me forward to continue studying the code and learn and, breaking it essentially in my own test networks and figuring out how to innovate that and finding out some of the weaknesses and ways that I can bridge a strength. And you know, that led me to do a lot of studying on quantum computers at the time, where I saw, you know, there were certain intelligence agencies that were building them, and the Google D-Waves were getting into the few thousand qubit range, which, you know, it started posing a lot of risk to the current cryptography. So that was one of the first things I solved, and then looked into creating new types of algorithms. And I mean, part of it also was just launching it on the Bitcoin Talk forum, similar to kind of how Bitcoin was launched on a mailing list. It was just very simple place where people could start talking around. I said, well, here's some of my initial ideas of what I'm building this currency to be. What do you think it should be? What would you like to see in it? And they gave me ideas. You should build a prime number searching algorithm for the proof of work. And I said, oh, that sounds fun. So I started geeking out on that, and I built it. And then I started realizing I could get the hash length up to 1024 bit to start searching for these really, really, really large prime numbers, you know, 10 to the 308 digits. And so, I mean, it just kind of unfolded like that. And one thing led to the next thing, and one innovation to the next innovation. And then it was born September 23rd, 2014. It was launched, and the network kind of, I mean, instantly was under attack, obviously, because in those days, I mean, there was a 51% attack the first day, but the distributed checkpointing system worked. And so they were unsuccessful, which was kind of cool to see. So, I mean, it just continued to battle hard. And then from that point, I developed the proof of stake system, which uses trust as a form of security. So kind of a philosophy is that not everybody has money, but everybody has time. So how do we make validation resources something that everybody has equally, instead of, oh, I have these millions of dollars to get these Bitcoin ASIC miners, or I have these millions of dollars to buy 50% of the stake of this currency, or anything of the sorts. And so this kind of unfolded a variable interest rate. Now it goes from 0.5% to 3% based on the amount of trust. And then that started to build up a new type of security measure you could build in. Well, this is a reputation of somebody, and it cost them time in order to build this reputation up. And it cost them time if they destroy this reputation, because you lose your reputation a lot faster than you gain it. So that started formulating some of the basis of what I call a TAO, where I was looking at the scaling solutions, because at the time we had the block size debates, we had segregated witness coming out. There was talks of the Lightning networks, and from my analysis of it, it didn't seem like a solution that I would feel integral implementing myself, just for the fact of you have off-chain transactions and simple things like that that kind of violate some of the original principles. And so I started focusing on kind of multi-tiered processing, so you could have a checks and balancing system that, you know, I mean, the United States government is one of those that was designed to be that way, checking and balancing of power, and validators essentially are power and voters. So that continued to unfold as, you know, over the few years, and seeing Ethereum come out and all the other cryptocurrencies, and kind of learning, okay, well, they're running into this limitation because of that, and they're running into this limitation from that. Oh, they got under attack for this, so that we could kind of just grow organically and watch everybody kind of make mistakes that we can learn from and prevent as we deploy future updates. And that kind of led it to here now, where there's a lot of different technology that's been built up, including the lower level library, the TAO framework, which is being deployed over a set of three updates over the next few years. That's gonna open up a single dimensional blockchain into a multi-dimensional blockchain, having trust and reputation on your signature chain, and advanced contracts and other things like that, that kind of make a blockchain very practical and easy to use and understandable and capable of being used for the scalability factor and longevity with the security and foresight of quantum computing, all of those sorts.
So if we were to boil this down to, so let's imagine I'm a user of, take an end user viewpoint for a minute. You know, maybe I want to use these utility tokens, or I want to just buy some Bitcoins and I'm experiencing a whole bunch of problems. Maybe I lost some private keys for my wallet, or I'm experiencing in the times I want to transfer, you know, crypto money from one wallet to another, it is taking days, or it's costing me a whole lot more than I thought. So as a user, these are the kinds of problems, or the exchange in which I have my money got hacked and I lost it. So these are the end user problems. Now, for a minute, if you were to talk about the implications of what you're developing to the end user, what would they be? How would they improve their lives eventually?
So the implications would be, I don't have to worry so much about losing my funds, because I can kind of have a similar type of situation where I don't have to store my private keys. I can have it more conceivable to me, similar to my bank account. I have my username and my password and a PIN number. And I can generate that and I can see my accounts and I can open my own accounts. And that way I can have something that I can relate to that I understand. And it works by being kind of an authorization system into a distributed environment, which is kind of the geekier, cool side of it. But I mean, for the end user also, I send this transaction, I know it gets to the endpoint. I send my transaction to an address that does not exist. It doesn't go there. It comes back to me because, you know, I don't want to make those mistakes. Another one would be, I have this financial contract and it's easy for me to write. I can say allowance for my son, if time is greater than 1 week, you know, deposit one amount of Nexus, let's say, and continue forward for 3 months, unless I use this key to sign and invalidate it. You know, something simple like that, so that you can, you know, in a normal way, somebody would think they can type that in and anybody will be able to access these types of contracts. You can do things like deploying a credit card or creating an account or a spend account that has a certain key, and then your master is your username and password that you can always revoke or validate or invalidate and sign off on one another, and then, I mean, form organizations, things like that. So, I mean, the idea is it needs to also be something that you can use and tap into, and that's where the interface is another huge part of it too. So you got all this technology, but how do I interact with it? And so the modular interface comes in where anybody can write a new module, anybody can tap into this, write your contracts right there. The wallet becomes very easy and accessible. Transactions are cheap and free.
And fast,
exactly.
That's a big part.
And secure. You know, you're never going to have to worry about losing your funds. And so I think those are some of the key points that we choose to kind of make it more relatable as possible. Not to say we have every answer figured out, but that's kind of where we stand.
Oh, that's very exciting. So I understand that's really grounds what you're building out. So I call them as known unknowns. Now, if you go to unknown unknowns, so like quantum computing, many people don't know that there is a potential risk lurking in the back. And you started thinking about that way back when, you know, like 2014, I only myself heard about those risks in last year. So can you talk about some of the, you know, unknown unknowns, talking about the end user or the common man, someone like me, that looking at this and saying, well, these are the known unknowns, but then what are these dangers that I may not know about that your technology will protect me from, for example?
Quantum computers are a big one. Risk of centralization of development is another big one, where if you have something that isn't able to, let's say, be democratically voted upon, like a Bitcoin block, if you read the initial Satoshi's white paper, it designates a vote for the end user, but the vote now has become worth millions and millions of dollars. So it's concentrated that power into a few hands. So it'll degrade back into this type of central system that we built these to avoid. So that's one thing. There needs to be more transparency with development. That's something we focus on, having contracts that are democratically voted, community governance with more areas of input other than I'm just a miner. You know, if I'm a holder, I can still vote, or if I stake, I can still vote, or if I make prime numbers, I can vote, or if I do an L1 lock on my cell phone, I can vote. And then another unknown would be the quantum computing issue. Now, it's becoming more known, which is good, but that's something that, I mean, essentially it's going to completely destroy a lot of the cryptography that we use today. So if you see some people where they have Bitcoin addresses tattooed onto them, their QR code, I mean, that's going to reveal a big problem, because when that public key is revealed, it's able to be reversed with, in Bitcoin, about 1,792 qubits at a specific, it's polynomial time rather than exponential time, which crypto should be. That just basically means way, 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 way faster. You want exponential time for crypto, you don't want exponential time for runtime. That's just a common computer science thing. But anyway, the quantum computers are going to completely decimate those keys. So, you know, if these other cryptocurrencies can't adapt, or there's open public keys from the past that are still available, they'll be able to start coming through and breaking them. So we have focused on preventing against the developer centralizing. Also, you know, certain people having some sort of funding mechanism built in where you can do projects for humanitarian purposes. And also being kind of voted in as kind of a distributed autonomous community. That's another thing. So we focus on those to make it safer and to be as forward-thinking as possible. One other thing is also that certain keys can already be cracked just with the 256-bit key space. There's, if you don't iterate the N once on your signature, which basically means it's something in the OpenSSL or the implementation of the wallet, you can actually go and if you have two duplicate R values, you can completely crack the private key without it on a computer, which has already been done multiple times. There's a guy that actually runs his algorithm through and he steals the Bitcoin so people don't have them stolen by somebody else, you know, kind of for the good. And he says, send me, you know, send a message to prove that you own this and I'll give it back to you, but don't do that again. So we get into this whole thing. And I mean, I think another thing is this industry is really fast paced and we take a very pragmatic approach, step by step by step, and make sure that we implement everything properly, which is, I think, another unknown. If you think that these systems are going to be built in a few days or a few weeks or a few months, there's a lot of unknown issues that come out through time and battle hardening the networks. So, I mean, an unknown is the people that are launching new blockchains. You know, there's a whole other aspect that comes in when you're making this private blockchain. There's not many unknown factors that come into play. But when you go out into the public in a while, I mean, you get a lot of people attacking it from all angles. And that's another unknown is how long has it been around, how battle hardened, and how much experience has been developed from that. And that's something that's very, very necessary, because when things hit the fan, I mean, there's a lot that goes down that needs to make sure to keep it maintained and running. And a lot more goes into it than we may think.
Yeah, and I think another unknown is the big positive upside. Well, if we build this modular interface, we build basically a basic tool set with advanced contracts, we don't know how people are going to go out and utilize these things. These are new forms of technology that combine many old technologies into one. I mean, a cryptocurrency is like a mix between a commodity, a currency, and equity, and it's got some aspects that are similar to debt-based instruments. So, I mean, what people can do with these tools, we don't know. And that's another unknown that is like potentially very positive, very expansive. And I mean, these systems are all equity based. So when, from an economics perspective, we think about it as like a prosperity based system, not a debt based system. You know, you don't have to go and pay this back to a central authority or a small set of people who have the right to issue the new currency. So these are totally different types of value transmission mechanisms that can really make a lot of positive change in the world. And the fact that, you know, with these types of systems, you're not going to have systemic risk from so much debt that will be lessened and lessened and lessened over time. And then it could even flip down the other way where there's so much equity in the system that, you know, people will be more free to do, to follow their passions and what they want to do rather than being, you know, enticed to do something that they may not want to do because of the time, how fast they have to make the payments on debt and things of that nature. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of upside here too. So we talk about the security, we talk about the downside, we talk about the risks. Everybody wants to keep their money safe, obviously. And we're really working to mitigate all of those. And at the same time, there's this huge other side, which is like, whoa, we can build things that have never been seen before.
Yeah, that's an unknown, definitely. Yeah. How do you build the unknown?
And that's the fun part. That's where you can create.
That is the really fun, passionate part. I mean, it takes a group of minds, a lot of people to contribute to that to make it as strong as possible. And I mean, keeping an open mind makes that possible, definitely.
And I'm sure you get a lot of these questions just because of the unique nature of Nexus. Then you guys are different from the norm. So what can I draw an analogy with Nexus Earth? Are you like an Ethereum and Neo? What are you guys? You know, what are you? Is there something I can equate you to out there, so to get a feel for who you are?
That's, I guess, a little difficult to quantify because we have so many different faucets. The advanced contracts are kind of to take the overcomplexity of Ethereum or Neo and make it something simple, focus more on DAOs, community. And then we also focusing a little bit on the satellite side of things. We can get into that a little bit later. artificial intelligence. I mean, I guess the thing that you can equate us with is we're innovators. We're focusing on multiple facets, digital identity systems, applications to that with, you know, let's say distributed voting platforms, data chaining, publishing, copyrights. I mean, a lot of those are the things, the practical use cases of smart contracts. Not necessarily as much for ICOs. I would call them DAOs, which would be the true way that an ICO, I believe, could be done, which is basically having, you know, everybody that distributes the money into this has say over how the money is spent. Instead of it being, once you send the money there, you're at the whim of the developer, hoping that they're honest and forthcoming. To kind of, I guess, so in the best way to describe it, I mean, Bitcoin is blockchain 1.0, Ethereum is blockchain 2.0. We're kind of forging the blockchain 3.0 space, and we're associating that with a lot of practical industries and practical use cases, because I believe Bitcoin introduced the idea of blockchain to everybody. Ethereum kind of showed people what a blockchain can do, and now we're going to be the ones that are really do it and ground that and bring that down the world so that people can find that practical use. They can say, what does this mean for me? Well, I have this app on my phone that does this and that, and that's what makes it possible. Nexus.
Yeah, exactly. And with that modular interface, you're just going to have people creating more and more applications and use cases. It's totally open source. Anybody can link into it and connect into that network. And I mean, from my perspective, it seems like, you know, when you combine technologies like currencies, commodities, you know, the idea of an equity, you're leading into a new future. And so you say, okay, well, what does the past kind of look like? Well, we had 196 nation state currencies in the world right now, which, you know, is great. And so how many cryptocurrencies will we have? I seem to see a future, and I could be totally wrong about this, but my gut just kind of tells me that there will be some finite number of, you know, large blockchains that carry a lot of the weight. You know, I think of them like big railroads that carry a lot of the transactional weight of the future. And I think, you know, Nexus is being built to be one of those railroads that can, you know, carry a lot of weight, provide solutions for things that we won't even know what they are right now, and then be able to handle it and be hyper resistant to any form of centralization. So, you know, the rules of this railroad will be preset, mathematically determined. Everybody will know what it is, and people can build what they want to on it.
And do you see this? Is Nexus a token? Is just like any? Is it a cryptocurrency? What is it?
It's a cryptocurrency with the live blockchain around since 2014. You go off the feature set, you know, we talked about some of the quantum security we built in, prime number hashing, multiple mining channels, distributed checkpointing, unified time protocols, proof of stake, trust, a lot of those aspects. So yes, it's a cryptocurrency, and it's a cryptocurrency meant to be as practical as possible. We like to say that we're approaching the currency aspect of what is it going to be useful for my currency to do? How can I tie my currency to my identity? How can I tie this to my data? How can I have that act as a distributed platform that then improves other businesses besides just value transmission mechanisms, which, you know, would be a currency? How can we put this into the medical industry? How can we see this in the music industry? How can we see this in real estate? All functioning seamlessly as, you know, as mostly automated system as possible.
My God, this is so fundamental, right? I mean, you literally, I like the way you explain it as blockchain 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. You guys are working on something really fundamental, and almost every blockchain developer out there should be kind of plugged into what you guys are doing and what you are coming out with, because it's going to make a dramatic difference in improving the kind of applications that they produce, right? So
that's the idea, and you know, I think
this is crazy. I mean,
it's a really big thing, and there's a lot of facets to it, and that's why we're working hard to organize, and we go out to a lot of different people in industry and take meetings with them, and we ask them what they want,
what they need,
what are you interested
in? What's your business like? What is the biggest challenges you have in your business? And here's kind of how a distributed database works, aka blockchain. and how do you believe this could fundamentally affect that? And brainstorming those and doing that for the last year or so, we've gained a really good understanding, a deep understanding of what businesses need, maybe what they don't even know they need,
right?
And how to develop that into this blockchain so that they can practically use it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just talking about just the fact that all of the things that you're doing should be communicated, and I'm sure you're doing all of this. I'm just like,
yeah, it's hard to we found it challenging to communicate it, you know, in some boiled down format. You know, everybody's, well, you should communicate it like this, you should communicate it like that, and we work on it all the time. But I mean, the truth of the matter is that the scope of the project is large, and therefore it takes a little bit of time and understanding to really understand it. But we are out forward in the future, and I think people will be. They'll see it more and more as the applications come online more and more. They're gonna start to see the power of it. I mean, Colin, you could talk about, you know, the transactions per second, like right now versus some of the others. And then the LLD is how fast those read writes are. Like, Colin developed this database, and it's like 9 times faster than Google.
Depending on the test.
Yeah, depending on the, well, the 100,000 read writes was 9 times faster, roughly.
Right.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on the keychain data storage, it's kind of
100,000 read writes per second.
Well, 100,000 read and writes. I think it was doing
0.85 seconds.
0.85 seconds for 100,000. So
yeah, versus 7 point something. For Google's.
Yeah, it operates close to order of one, which basically means constant time, no matter the size of the record set. So, I mean, initially, Google's level database was remotely just about as fast. It depended on the test, if you do 1,000 or 100, depending on how they cache the writes. And then as the database got bigger and bigger, the level DB continued to get slower and slower, and Oracle's BerkeleyDB got slower and slower faster, and eventually BerkeleyDB dropped off. It wouldn't even read and write those 100,000 after it got to about 10 to 12 million. Lower level database kept chugging away. Level database kept getting slower and slower just because of the size of the indexing system. So, I mean, that was a fundamental, it was a good word that you said the other day, fundamental aspects. I mean, that's kind of how far down in the lower levels we've focused on. Well, you know, you're using this distributed database system and you're writing keys and values into this database system. You'd want that database to be as fast as possible so you have the least amount of software bottlenecks. I mean, you can have a hardware bottleneck where the hardware is only capable of processing, but if the software doesn't utilize the hardware efficiently, then that compounds when you start talking about 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 transactions per second. Every millisecond, microsecond is going to compound that. So now is the appropriate time to whittle this down and make it as fast as possible by being as simple as possible to function as it needs to. That's where kind of the fundamentals of the lower level library come from, which is the lower level crypto, lower level database, and lower level protocol. And then we've been focusing with Dino Farinacci, who's one of the first, I think, 10 or 20 employees for Cisco. He's responsible for, I think, 10 or 20, 30 protocols that we use on the internet today. And he's created Lisp, which is Location Identity Separation Protocol. And what that is doing is it's running on about mid layer 3, where you have your layer 1, which is basically your hardware. Layer 2 is kind of your MAC address. You have layer 3, which is your IP, and then layer 4, which would be your packet, UDP, TCP. So this goes between layer 3 and layer 4. You get to layer 5, which could be SSL layer, and then layer 6, 7, which is application layer. So a lot of these run up here, and they run over TCP. But Dino's developed this new technology, which we've been slowly integrating into Nexus, that runs on very, very low levels, which is going to affect the network transmission time. It's going to affect your availability, your connections, punching through the NAT routers, everything like that. So these are the, I guess, culminations of the foundation that we're setting now, and that's kind of what the lower level library TAO is a foundation for these futures. Because, I mean, if we don't look at all of these bottlenecks, we're going to need to go to off-chain sailing solutions like Lightning or other things. But to remain a truly integral distributed system that resists corruption on every level, we need to focus on every level we can on computational aspects, including protocol, database, things like that. So I guess those are some good fundamentals that you brought up, because they're kind of focusing down to every byte possible, every bit even, as you have 100 million transactions in a day, that's 100 million extra bytes if you have one more byte than you need.
And to bring that back in, all that tech stuff back into something that's really practical for somebody, it's like, hey, well, you know, if you don't want the potential, and this is an extreme case, but it just illustrates a point. If you don't want the potential of a totalitarian system taking over your blockchain, then you want this technology. You want this kind of stuff built in there so that it can be distributed, so that nobody can take it over, that it's so spread out amongst the whole world that there's just no chance of that. And then therefore it will operate in the way that we need it to, as we need it to every day for everybody, period.
And there's no mathematics, stopping. Mathematics being the regulator.
Right, mathematics is the regulator.
You can't corrupt mathematics no matter how hard you try it, because that's something that's verifiable. And I mean, that's something similar. A comparison, I guess you could say, the Renaissance brought an incredible amount of art because it came from the scientific method being founded, which was that I verify your experiment. Now, in a similar sense, distributed networks are that type of way where you're checking and balancing whether you're verifying each other, the computers are verifying each other, people are verifying each other, and that opens up to have a greater truth be revealed that can't be corrupted, because this truth is only truth, it's only fact if it can be verified by others. And that's what nodes on a computational layer are doing.
I have done over 100 episodes in Crypto Nights, and I have had maybe one or two jaw-dropping moments, but I have been having so many jaw-dropping moments in one episode. And that's not a flippant view, it's a considered opinion. I've done these so many of these. And many of the things you're talking about are so fundamental, so radical, so impactful. And so if you don't mind, I'll shift to something. I'm almost feeling like, you know, if somebody invented the iPhone and kept it a secret kind of a thing, right? How big is your community that regularly interacts with you? And how do you interact with your community? Is it like an email list? Do you do webinars? Do you do conferences?
How many people are on the Slack right now?
I think there's close to 6,000 people on Slack, 18,600 people following on Twitter, 10,000 on Facebook. The mining industry, gosh, I mean, I'd say 5,000 or 10,000 miners. I couldn't really give that exact trade volume. It's 500,000 to 1,000,000 to 2,000,000 with spikes higher consistently. So, I mean, it's a pretty large, sizable community. And a lot of people have said it's crypto's best kept secret, which is kind of interesting. We've kind of grown inside the crypto space to make our own space.
It's exactly what I'm saying, right? Talk about, you're two orders of magnitude away from the optimal. I mean, yeah, 6,000 is great, but given the size and impact and the depth of what you're looking at and the fundamental nature,
that might be for a reason too, right? I mean, it might give us enough time to just kind of sit back and see what we need to see and develop what we need to develop take a pragmatic approach. I mean, you know, these systems can touch 7 billion people. It's really, really important. I mean, and we're working on some other things, and we have, like, in the nonprofit, we work on plans to bring good things to the world. I'll just put it that way without revealing some of the secrets until they're out. But I mean, we want to bring good things to the world and connect people in new ways. So we have some really good ideas to do that. And because these tools can, it's a technology. It can be used for massive good, and that's what we intend to use it for.
And Keir, that's another head-slapping moment. I mean, after all this, you slap this label on top of it and say, we are a nonprofit. So what was the intent behind that? And so as a nonprofit that's going on for so many years, how are you funded?
So there's a self-funding mechanism built into Nexus. So didn't have to do an ICO. It could be considered kind of a commission. I mean, as the system gets built bigger, we can remain our serenity. And that kind of goes into those reserves that go through this nonprofit. The reason behind a nonprofit is that was the most agnostic way we could do it. It's not owned by anybody. So that was the best that we could have some sort of structure around it to have the team built up and grow and eventually expand that out forward into the contracting system, like I was explaining earlier, that will allow you to vote in people. So eventually this nonprofit will be a part of a contract that will be voted in, and other people will have more as the network grows and distributes further. more people can form around that and they can be hired or fired based on the performance and community both.
Yeah, so you can think of it like we're nurturing a child up to a certain point when it can, you know, run off in the world on its own. So that's the nonprofit is here to nurture this thing up to the point where we start to release, you know, its, I guess, control over it. But we need to get the development to the point where these contracts and these systems and everything's been really thought out, and then we'll release it slowly out there. I mean, the whole idea of the nonprofit is, I mean, if you're going to have a self-funded mechanism within something that's as powerful as this could be, as more and more people, as this will be, in my opinion, as more and more people start to find out about it, you know, it's something that you need to take great care in how you approach this. You know, we don't want somebody who's, you need a certain type of people. Like when we're trying to find people who work with us in the nonprofit, it's definitely a certain personality type, you know, and somebody who understands that that's part of this mission. You know, we need to get this thing to this point, and then it will be released and it will be on its own. And then, like Colin said, there will be more and more people involved in directing what these funds are.
Yeah, that's the DAC. So the DAC is Distributed Autonomous Community, which you could consider kind of like a global DAO for the whole entire network, which would be regulating consensus updates and be regulating investor contracts, developer contracts. Which those I was stating earlier, a developer can be hired in by putting a petition out and saying, I'd like to develop this for Nexus and be paid this much per month, so on and so forth. The community votes it in, this person's therefore hired. If they don't perform, then they can be fired and their funding is cut off. So that allows it to kind of be, I guess, the global people kind of form and work together to carry it forward so that people can elect people to represent some of this, but it not being something that's stuck. It'll be changeable, mutable over a period of time based on the votes of people. So the initial sentiment now is, you know, putting the right people together to grow it forward with the right intentions. And as it grows forward, it continues to distribute further and further. And that carries it forward just like a child's life. It grows and it knows only its mother, and then his father, and then his friends, and then his family, and then his house, and then his life distributes further and further. And that's kind of like Nexus as it's growing up. It's becoming more and more of that instead of going the other way and throwing a child out in the middle of the world where it doesn't know what to do. We're kind of raising it, I guess you could say, and helping it grow up, right?
Well, we can keep going on and on, and I don't even think we will still reach the tip of the iceberg. So maybe I'll just come back to you guys and do episodes on different angles of Nexus.
Yeah, we'll be happy to do that.
And slice and dice, because that'll be more meaningful, digestible chunks of information that our audience can more easily digest. So so this has been more of a teaser episode, as far as I can see. So where do you suggest that our listeners go to right after this for more information or to stay engaged with you guys?
Well, I think you go to the website, nexusearth.com is a place to start. We're going to be expanding that, I think, in the future into some more websites that are more, like you said, sliced up and, you know, get towards different angles of it. I think they can go to the Slack too. And one thing that I'll mention and is we do these things, there's pods that exist. And these pods are people from the community who want to help. And so in the core, one of the jobs that we're working on is saying, hey, well, we know we have a lot to do. And there's so much to do, in fact, that we can't do it all. So we're going to start organizing this more and more over time, and the pods will take on certain things. Like we have a pod that, you know, has helped us get on new exchanges. So these are people in the community who work to help us grow it. And so in that way, we're, you know, it's the beginning of
horizontal.
What you're talking about.
It's forming horizontal structures. I mean, we live in a,
or like a web,
the hierarchical system. How do we make horizontal organizational systems? So this is based off of some of the research of John David Garcia, where groups of eight actually form the most creative combination of people, and they can function somewhat like cells function in our body. So how do we do this? And they, you know, we kind of started, they're still experimental. That's kind of one of the other technologies we work on, the social technologies, and they work on bounties, so they get paid Nexus for tasks, things like that. that's a way to help kind of organize and rally people in the community to say, I want to get involved, but you know, I only have a limited amount of time. I guess another place would be good is check out our YouTube. We have a large amount of videos there, especially from our last conference. There was a lot of great speakers. There was a lot of good insight there too. It was a very collective spirit of let's come together and figure out how to improve the world.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to have another conference this year in Phoenix.
Yeah, we do so. We do it September 23rd for our birthday. So that's Nexus's fourth birthday this year. And we're taking this conference to the next level, which improving that horizontal organizational model, creating working groups, rallying people together. Okay, we have these challenges. How can we as leaders of our industries work together to improve this? Because Metcalfe's law, if you're not familiar, it states that the value of a telecommunication system is based on the square of the participants. In other words, people coming together, collaborating exponentially multiplies. So the collaborative spirit is something that we really carry forward. If you have four people competing against four people, you have 16 versus 16. But if you have eight people together, then you have 64, which is, you know, twice as much.
Right.
So that collaborative spirit, how do we help give motivation for that? because we're in such a hyper-competitive world. How do we make that as horizontal as possible? So that's something else that we kind of play around with our conference. So that's another way to get involved, or just, I mean, contact us. I mean, call in at nexus.io or Kiara at nexus.io too. If you want to get involved, I mean, we're always open-armed and happy to see people come together and bring new ideas to the table. Because, I mean, Nexus means a connection between two or more things. So that's really the ultimate essence of it all.
Absolutely. And one of the most frequently asked questions of people calling us is, how do I do an ICO? So are there companies that have, do you already have companies that have run their ICOs off of the Nexus platform? Or can they, you know, can you shed some light on that? Because I know that a fraction of our audience is interested in those.
Yeah, so you're not going to really call them ICOs. They're going to be more DAOs. That's going to be forming in the basis of our next update, our 3.0. That's where we're deploying a lot of these contracting systems. So keep an eye on that. It should be out sometime very soon. We've been working on this update for a while. So that's going to be the first stage. So if you want to be the first to prepare to run some funding on Nexus, that would be awesome. And it's going to be a completely new territory, completely new way to do it. So it'll be kind of putting you at the forefront of at least what we hope to be the new way to raise money.
And can they, is there a newsletter that you guys have on your website that they can sign up for? And so when this announcement about DAO release comes out, they can get informed?
Yeah, we put out a newsletter every month.
We put a newsletter out every month.
Is there a sign up for the newsletter? Or?
Yeah,
on the website, there should be sign up for it.
An email on there, yes. Email list. So
yeah.
Or keep your eye on our Facebook, Twitter, join the Slack, a lot of other things. Download a wallet. Check it out. I mean, shoot some tips. I've put a list on there. If anybody wants to get in contact with me, you'll see it. Or, I mean, even read the history of Nexus on Bitcoin Talk. I mean, that's kind of been a nice little history all the way through. It's got 3 or 4 years of history. I mean, Kier, when he first got involved, you read through a lot of it.
Yeah, I read through all of it.
Paints a cool story.
Well, gentlemen, this has been fascinating. Are there any other, I know there are probably a lot of stuff that you could have talked about, but are there any other critical elements that, you know, I should have asked about, but I did not?
I think we talked about mainly all the critical elements.
Yeah. I mean, I think in future ones, we can get into some deeper essences. Maybe we can go a little deeper into our satellite plans, how we're leveraging that to make that happen on multiple fronts. The mesh network ideas, maybe go deeper into contracting engines, security aspects. There's a lot of different implications, or even the movement that's happening, the community that's growing to, you know.
Yeah, change. I would just add that this is like, this doesn't happen with just us working it as the core. Like, it really has to be a community. And you say the nonprofit, well, why the nonprofit? It's like, well, if you're going to really reform the world system, it can't just be a few people doing it. It has to be everybody doing it, and they have to have their input, and we have to give them tools so that they can input. And then, you know, we'll spread it out more and more and more, and then it will be many, many, many people having input over the system as time goes on.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I wish you the best, and thank you. This was a fascinating episode. I'm sure a lot of people will not just enjoy it, but learn and become engaged with your community.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you very much for having us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Knights. Never miss an episode. Subscribe now at www.cryptonights.io.